Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Hayden Gullis, and James Coker as your host today. It is the summer break, so we are scraping the barrel for news that is breaking today because everyone just seems to be off. They're on their holidays. We hope everyone's having a fantastic summer break wherever you are in the world. But James, we do have a bit of news to talk about, and we want to bring it back to what we talked about in the podcast earlier on in the week and talk about Oscar Piastri and having that fractured rib just before he won the race in Hungary.
Of course, we all know that the Australian won his first Formula One Grand Prix in Hungary with a fractured rib, confirmed by the sonogram or x-ray or whatever it was that he posted. But follow-up scans also show that he has that dog in him. You know?
You just got pause for the laugh, the backing laughter track. Hang on. We'll get that edited in. There we go.
We're going to add the cam laughter. But if we were to x-ray the other drivers on the Formula One grid, what dogs would we see in them?
I think Max Verstappen is like, I'm not massively good with dog breeds, but is it like a Staffy?
I'd say a Doberman Pinscher.
I think Max Verstappen is, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but I mean like one of those small dogs that are very aggressive. And I just mean because he's quite adorable outside of the race car. Like you look at him outside of the race car, you're like, this is a great guy. He seems like a lot of fun. But then in that race car, that dog is barking at you. It's ready to bite. You know, it will go crazy. That's what I feel like for Max Verstappen. Like you look at him, you're like, okay, this is a sound guy. He's really, really nice. I'm sure we're going to have a nice race out on the racetrack. And then all of a sudden, just bites you, barks in your face.
I think we all know what dog would be inside George Russell, right?
What are we going for?
A golden retriever.
Yeah. George is a golden retriever.
He has shown that he is like full golden retriever, especially like in the last 2 years when he's sort of leaned in to how he has the tendency to be a walking meme.
So how he is just a massive walking Tory, basically. he's leaned into it. He's now fully kitted out in blue. Who else? I think Charles Leclerc also potential to be a golden retriever. But then also I think, you know, him and Leo are a match made in heaven. They're exactly the same.
Often people say dogs resemble their owners, and I see a resemblance in Charles Leclerc and Leo. I see it.
I don't see it with Hamilton and Roscoe.
I don't.
Hamilton's not like about being lazy all day.
No, they're different. So it's funny that Hamilton has Roscoe, but like I don't think Hamilton would have a bulldog that likes to lounge inside of him.
And that's maybe, who knows? Outside of F1 races, he's just on his back the whole day, just chilling.
I feel like Lewis Hamilton is like a very sporty dog inside who also is like very stylish. So I'm thinking like a greyhound.
Greyhound. Okay. Yeah. Those I know what you're on about. Yeah, you see them out and about, especially when they've got owners who are quite wealthy and they're dressed up quite stylishly. And usually it's turtlenecks, I feel like. That's what I'm picturing. A greyhound in a turtleneck. I don't know. Is that just me?
Oh sure, why not? Let's put a greyhound in a turtle. Like a Dior turtleneck that's like not off the rack, it's couture. And then I feel like Alonso would be a dog that people love, but a dog that doesn't like people, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So I'm thinking like a chow.
Okay.
You know what a chow is?
A chow.
They kind of look like lions.
How do how we spell it?
Like chow.
Okay.
I think Alonzo's like a chow.
Oh,
because
yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. Like a big bear, basically.
Yeah, people love chows, but chows aren't super friendly.
Yeah. Are there any dogs that are typically very, very slow to get started? And then...
Well, a bulldog.
But then they're quite fast, you know, at top speeds.
Oh, that's a good question. Because like,
that's one I'd say that Lando Norris is currently.
That's so funny. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe a bulldog top speed's going really fast.
Yeah, great top speed. Like top speed is insane. But just takes you like a couple of extra seconds to get going, like unlike all the other dogs.
You know what we need to do? We need to get every different breed of dog with some wind tunnel time to really fully understand the arrow of all the
Yeah. Yuki's definitely a chihuahua, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Small, big bark. Yeah, that's Yuki Tsunoda.
Love it. But also, speaking of different breeds of dogs, did you see the video that Max Verstappen did a few weeks ago where he was asked to name different breeds of cats?
Cats, yeah. He was very impressive.
He got 100%.
Yeah, I'm terrible with cat breeds. I'm not a cat fan. I'm really sorry to any cat owners out there. But I don't hate cats. I just would never get a cat. I'm allergic to them. And I just, they're not for me. They're not for me at all. I don't look at a cat and go, that's cute. I'm actually like, keep it away from me, please. But dogs, love dogs, but I'm still terrible with dog breeds. Like, I barely know dog breeds. So the fact that he got 100% on them, like, insane.
Well, he has cats, correct?
Yes, I believe he does, yeah.
And he was like, it wasn't just that he got them all right. He was excited to play that game, which I thought was like very funny. It was just like very unexpected. But I also thought it was very smart on Red Bull and Max Verstappen's camp's like part, because it was fresh on the heels, pun intended, of the race where he was yelling at GP and, you know, the whole quote unquote scandal of him staying up late and gaming and then not performing well. And so it felt like kind of a PR campaign to try to like get people back on his side. And so they released that. And then I know yesterday they released a picture of him in like an ice bath with a rubber duck and with like the caption recharging, like, oh, look how cute I am.
This is what I mean. Like outside of the car, lovable guy. I think anybody would love to meet him, hang out with him. I think he seems very down to earth, loves his gaming. And I think there's a lot of times that people, you know, come into a bit of fame, a bit of power, and they're like, that's not for me anymore. Like, forget where they come from. Whereas Max, you know, still loves his game, still hangs out with sim racers all the time and, you know, stays in VCs with them when, you know, he doesn't have to do that. And that's what I really, really love about him. And I think, you know, he is a great guy. But then you put him in the car and, oh my God, he's just a completely different person. He's got that dog in him, okay? Because he's just got that dog in him.
He's got that dog in him.
But he has. And, you know, racing drivers, you have to. Like, you cannot be friendly out on track. You can't just go, oh, no worries. You can't be like George Russell, be like, oh, don't worry, dear chap. You just have that space there and overtake me. Oh, don't worry about that. I'll see you at the end
of
the finish line.
He's flashing his brights, please, after you.
Yeah, indicating out of the way of other drivers, putting his hazards on. No, like, you've got to be aggressive, and you're not going to be a champion unless you are aggressive. And, you know, it's that mentality. But sometimes, you know, I'm a bit like, come on, mate, just chill it down a little bit. You don't need to be going at your team so much. It's a bit disrespectful. But, you know, I think that's the Max Verstappen himself is just Marmite. You know, outside the car, love him. Inside the car, well, riles you up sometimes.
Next up, this year, the year of our Lord 2024, this year marks the 40th anniversary of Formula One in Texas. I don't know if you knew that, Hayden.
I didn't know it was 40. That's a long time.
So there was a big gap. So while the United States Grand Prix has been at COTA, at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, since 2012, the first time Formula One ever came to Texas was in 1984 with the Dallas Grand Prix. It was the one and only year that Formula One came to Dallas, and it was a mess. And it's funny because this, I was born in Dallas in 1984. So I was 5 months and 2 days old when this Grand Prix happened. I was not there. I didn't know it was happening, but it was happening 10 minutes away from where I lived. But do you know anything about this race, Hayden?
1984 Dallas. I feel like quite a few of the American ones mix in my head for me because I was not around then. That was 12 years before my time.
Right. There are also some other famous American ones that were a mess. Like they did it for 2 years in Vegas in the early 80s, in like 81 and 82.
In the car park, the Vegas car park.
In the car park of the MGM or Caesars Palace Casino.
Yeah.
And that was also a mess and did not go over very well. And they pulled out of Vegas. They spent a lot of the 80s trying to figure out where their forever home. Yeah. And trying to figure out where their forever home was going to be for the United States Grand Prix. And they kept striking out. They went to Phoenix. They did Long Beach for a while. And that was like considered like the Grand Prix of the West or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they did this 1 year in Dallas. And it was essentially held in a parking lot in Fair Park.
Yeah.
Which is the home of the Texas State Fair and the Cotton Bowl. Texas State Fair happens once a year. You know, they don't have state fairs in the UK. Do you know what a state fair is?
I don't. Maybe it can be translated to something similar. Let me have a look what a state fair is. You carry on. I'll have a look what a state fair is.
Well, I'll just tell you. I mean, like the Texas State Fair is like it's up for like 3 weeks every year. There's like livestock competitions. There's like carnival games. There's like a car show. There's rides. It's like a traveling carnival that
like
comes
a very smaller scale. I'd say a lot of places, and obviously we're a smaller country, so you know, you could travel between these different fairgrounds. But definitely during the summer there'd be a few fairs going on, but on a much smaller scale, because you definitely see these things in movies. I just quickly looked up as well, and you definitely see these sort of things as every now and again there's a movie that comes about where they go on a date and go to one of these, you know, state fairs. So
like in the Notebook. Have you ever seen the Notebook?
I have seen the Notebook. Yes.
Yeah. When he's doing that little stunt on the Ferris wheel. I don't know if you remember that. But essentially, so the 1984 Dallas Grand Prix was held in the parking lot in Fair Park.
Mm-hmm.
The track had to be repaired just hours before the race. KK Rosberg, who eventually won the race, racing for Williams at the time, called the track disgustingly bad, the worst I've ever seen. It was so bad that race organizers were making last minute repairs right before the race with quick dry cement. Niki Lauda and Alan Prost tried to organize a boycott among drivers, but KK Rosberg essentially vetoed their attempt and said, we should race. 100 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what the translation is. That it probably like 30 degrees Celsius.
I'm going to imagine it means hot. I'm going to guess.
It means hot.
100 degrees. Yeah.
100 degrees with track temperatures of 150 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. So 100 is 37 Celsius, which is hot. I mean, that was about what it was getting towards on the worst days in Hungary. 150 and 65. So extremely hot on tires.
I'm so glad you're here to do these conversions for me. But towards the end of the race, Nigel Mansell's Lotus like stalled out, essentially. It came to a halt. And he got out of the car. It was on the last lap. And he tried to physically push
him.
Yeah. He tried to physically push the car across the finish line and pass out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the 26 cars entered, only 8 finished due to crashes and mechanical failure. So that's 18 DNFs.
Bring that back. Bring back 18 DNFs. They're too reliable these days.
Right? Too reliable.
Too reliable. We're getting races where everyone finishes in exactly the same position now. Too reliable. Let's get 18 DNFs back.
18 DNFs, I guess everything is bigger in Texas, you know? but this is the race that had the famous Ayrton Senna moment where he was driving for Tolman at the time and he crashed into a wall that he swore moved. And everyone's like, no, Ayrton, you're crazy. And then after the race, he walked the track and lo and behold, the part of the wall that he hit, there was a cement block that had moved just a few millimeters during the course of the race. And Senna was driving so close to the wall with such precision that small change caused him to hit the wall. And it's like a legendary story in the cinema.
Do you reckon George Russell, after Singapore, did a track walk around Singapore and said, yeah, that's moved a little bit as well. What? That was here, I swear, not there.
You mean when he went straight into the wall?
And he clipped the wall on the outside going in, yeah.
So the winner of the race was Keke Rosberg of Williams. So Formula One leaves after that 1 year because it's a disaster. Comes back to Texas in 2012 at the Circuit of the Americas in Austin. I know when it started, there was no guarantee that it was going to stay in Austin, but now it seems like it has a permanent home there. But my question is, what should Formula One do to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Formula One in Texas?
Only two things I can think about. First of all, get rid of all the sound and just get the meow, 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 because that was at Texas 1 year. Get that guy back so he can do the meow noises on the microphone.
Wait, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right, it was during a practice or race. I don't know what part of the weekend it was, but there was a guy that went up to the top of the tower, and you've got the microphones positioned, and he was literally found one of the actual broadcast microphones was going, meow, meow, like you can actually physically hear it, like going over, and it's brilliant. And my second favorite moment from Texas of all time that I remember, 2012 race, Lewis Hamilton just overtakes Sebastian Vettel. It pans to two fans in the grandstand, or I think they were like Paddock Club. They look at each other. They're cheering for Lewis for the overtake. They go for the high five, completely miss it. Completely miss the high five live on cameras. I've got it here. I'll send it to you after this podcast. You can
see
that.
That's so funny. I can't wait to see
brilliant.
That.
Is that a proper way to celebrate? Probably not. Would I like to see it? Yes, of course. But proper way to celebrate, bring back 18 DNFs, I guess. It's an exciting race. cut all reliability to make it as difficult for the teams as possible to build their cars.
Yeah, new specs to make the cars less reliable.
Yeah.
That's what they should be doing with the 2026 regulations.
And then bigger flags.
Oh, yeah.
To mark 4 years, bigger flags.
I think we need an even bigger flag. So I don't know if you saw it. They revealed a very cool University of Texas livery for this year, by the way. I think it's partially to promote University of Texas joining the SEC, which is the Southeastern Conference. They're going to be playing against new opponents in college football and other collegiate athletics. But I have a number of things that I think Formula One should do to celebrate 40 years of Formula One in Texas this year.
Okay.
First,
bring it to me.
First off, the trophy is made of brisket. And
I'm in for it.
The Ferrari Trento is replaced with a tall boy of Lone Star, which is a Texas beer, which is like a very cheap beer, or barbecue sauce.
Yeah. Oh my God. Could you imagine the mess on the podium?
Could you imagine?
But I'm here for it.
Maybe Ferrari Trento will collab. Maybe Ferrari Trento will make a bottle of sparkling barbecue sauce that they could spray on the other drivers on the podium.
Oh my God.
They'd have to wear goggles, though.
Yeah. Big time. Big time. Or not, you know, we lose three drivers from the championship. It means we get three new drivers on the podium the week after because they can't see anymore.
Next one, drivers parade all on horseback.
Or we go one further and drivers race on horseback.
Yeah.
How about that? We get some real horsepower into the sport.
Wah, 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 wah. I love that. The driver who finishes P20, or in words of Logan Sargeant, P last, has to ride a bull.
Yeah.
Giant belt buckles on the race suits, and maybe the belt buckles could weigh 1.5 kilograms.
Would save George Russell. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I like that idea. Yeah.
Are you aware of the song Deep in the Heart of Texas?
I'm not, so we're going to need a rendition
from
you now.
It's a classic Texas song, and it goes, "The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas." And there's like a very famous scene in one of the Pee Wee Herman movies where he's like, "Where are you?" He goes, "I'm Texas." He goes, "Prove it." And he put the phone down and starts yelling, "The stars at night are big and bright." And like 50 people turn around and go, "Deep in the heart of Texas." So my pitch is that they change the words just for that one day. The lights go out and then we shout deep in the heart of Texas. That's a very niche Texas joke.
Very niche. I mean, Crofty might pull it out. He's pulled off some weirder catchphrases, so he might pull out.
Keep the Pirelli cowboy hats. Love the Pirelli cowboy hats.
Definitely. Yeah.
Replace the front wings on all the cars with Longhorns.
Just, easy way to give others punches. Just like, right, get it.
Duff, there'll be a lot duff, of that, punches. That will duff, get you duff. Your 18 DNFs that you want.
Perfect. I'm here for it. Yes.
It will probably mess with the aero on the car, but it will look cool.
Surely it was more aerodynamic because it's more streamlined now, right?
Perhaps.
Horns are pointy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say they're more streamlined.
Replace the rear wing with a giant cowboy hat that folds down when DRS is enabled.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So you don't have the drag. And in honor of KK Rosberg's win in 1984, a Williams has to win the race.
Okay. Does it matter which one? Does it have to be the American driver? Or we're like, that's a step too far.
It could be whoever. I mean, they had a Finnish driver win it, so it could be either Alex or Logan. Dealers
just put Bottas in the car for the weekend.
They should.
And then we got a finish. Job done.
Would be brilliant.
Bring back Kimi.
Yeah. Cool. And that's what I got. Any other suggestions?
That's what you've got.
Given your vast knowledge of the state of Texas.
Yeah, so obviously I go there like every weekend. It's just a quick hop across the pond. What else? I don't know. We have Sheldon Cooper just announcing all the drivers on the grid because obviously in the show, The Big Bang Theory, he's from Texas. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, from the show, he's from Texas. So we just get him introducing all the drivers in a very sort of socially awkward way. And I think people love it. We are going to get announcements again, and I want to see when, you know, in Vegas, where he was like, Checo Perez, and Perez just stood there.
That was so
aura
awkward.
By the second. So more of that, please.
Yeah.
More of that. Or Logan Sargeant, where he came out and when he said, I can't remember what sort of he said, but he was like, big ups to America or something like that, or let's do this for America. And it was just no one in the crowd cheering, just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Logan. So more awkwardness.
Yeah.
Give me more awkwardness.
I love it. The driver announcements are a weird thing. And I don't think drivers are fans.
I like them.
Do you really?
I do like them. Yeah. I like things being different. And I like going to different countries and really getting on board the culture of the country rather than bringing European culture to all these other countries. I don't think we should do that. And I think we should go and embrace it. Like, my favorite ever thing they've done is where we went to Mexico and they had the Mexican band, you'll probably know the actual name for it, but where they are playing the F1 theme tune.
Yeah, with mariachis.
That's it, the mariachi bands, yeah. Yes. And they were doing the theme tune. And I think we should do that.
That's fun.
With so many different circuits. Like, we could go to the British Grand Prix, for example, and it would be played on the bagpipes.
Sure.
Because bagpipes is a very, you know, it's mainly Scottish, but it's part of Britain for now until
right.
they decide to leave us. But yeah, for now, we could have the bagpipes playing for that. And I think there's a sort of, you know, other countries have, you know, signature instruments that they've used.
You know what they should do for the Australian Grand Prix?
On a didgeridoo.
They could do a didgeridoo, but they also could have the Formula One theme playing to open the race. And while that's happening, have the Australian breakdancer Ray Gunn dancing to it. Do a break.
So we have a didgeridoo playing and Ray Gunn is dancing at the same time.
Ray Gunn is dancing on the starting grid, like next to one of the liveries, doing her kangaroo moves.
Yes. Fully here for it. But yeah, driver parade and driver announcements when we go to America. Yes, okay. We're not used to it in the UK. We're not used to it in Europe, but It's also different. It's fun. And you kind of, whilst we cringe at it, we're excited for it when it comes around, if that makes sense.
I think I find it so refreshing that you like it, because most people I see online just hate on it.
That's just because online people just love
yeah.
to hate. And I feel like you only ever see the things that people hate. I
yeah.
feel like people only ever comment on things if they aren't happy with it. If they are happy with it, they're just like, cool, I like that, but I don't need to give my praise to them. I just say, I like that.
Yeah, they're like, oh, that's nice.
Watching. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Moving on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Should we get back to some news?
Let's get back to the news. Okay. This came out a couple hours ago. Flavio Briatore recently stated that because he still is the manager, he's still Fernando Alonso's manager, yeah, that Fernando Alonso plans to retire at the end of the 2026 season.
Okay.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I mean, he's still going. And how old is he now? Like 45? 42?
I think
43, he's 40. Like
I think he's 42. But I think Fernando Alonso is going to give up his Formula One seat when you pry it away from his cold, dead, lifeless fingers.
Yeah.
I don't think he is ever going to, he's 43. I don't think he's ever going to choose to retire.
Yeah. So he'd be 45 if he retires in 26. I know that he signed a sort of a long deal with Aston Martin that was very much teased that there is life for him after driving for Aston Martin. There's a job still there working within the team. What that would be hasn't really been announced, but there's something for him within the Aston Martin family. And of course, contracts are contracts. If somebody comes to him that's in a top team and has the fastest car, he might go in 2026. Okay, cool. I'm going to go to this team. But it would seem weird to do one season of the new regulations and then leave, but maybe that's an option in the case of the moment. If he doesn't like the new regulation changes and goes, okay, cool, Formula One's not for me anymore, I'm going elsewhere. But if he does like the new regulations, and also, much more importantly, is with a team that can compete at the front with the new regulations, then I'm pretty sure he's going to stay for a little bit longer. But I do know, and we spoke about it last time, that you know they kind of want Max Verstappen in there as well.
Right.
Is that going to be Alonso with Lance until Max is free, or is it going to be Alonso and Max and Lance Stroll moves on, which I can't see happening either.
I think people are going to be tuning into Formula One in the year 2075. We're going to see Fernando Alonso in a walker.
Yeah.
Just barely able to walk. He's going to get into a car and put it on pole at Spa.
Absolutely rapid. Well, he had a crash in I think it was like 2015 in testing, and nobody knows what happened under that crash. Mm-hmm. He just crashed in testing. There was no cameras on that corner. No one knows what happens. It's believed that it was some sort of electrical issue, but it's not being confirmed. And none of this that I'm about to say is true. It's all just conspiracy theories and rumors. But basically, the story goes that he woke up in hospital and was telling, they were asking, like, you know, trying to see how mentally stable he was. Who are you? What's your passion? What's your career? And he was just like, yeah, I'm Fernando Alonso. I'm going to be starting my first season in Formula One, like thinking he was in 2000.
Wow.
That's the story. That's the rumor. But then since then, like, his body is just not really aged in that sort of sense. Like, he's mentally just still been a lot younger, and that's why he just keeps on going. So who knows, maybe another 20 years time is that's when Fernando finally, in his mind, he hits 50 and he's like, yeah, okay, cool, we're hang up the gloves
so
now.
He really was a rookie when he did that test then.
He really was a rookie when he did that test.
That's wild. He's had a handful of really scary crashes. There was a crash Fernando Alonso had in the 2003 Brazilian Grand Prix. And it was a race where he ended up on the podium. I believe he finished third, but he didn't stand on the podium because he was rushed to the hospital. The race ended on a red flag and he was rushed to the hospital and didn't get to celebrate the podium. And it was a really, really scary crash.
I think it was Giancarlo Fisichella, I think it might have been, crashed into the barrier, or might be Mark Webber, actually. Crashed
it was
into the
Mark
barrier.
Webber. Giancarlo Fisichella won the race. Kimi Raikkonen got second, but Raikkonen thought he had won, And then that whole race
they
was
switched
a mess.
Back in yes. Bahrain. Yes, I remember they went to Bahrain. They switched the trophy.
They
yes.
switched the trophies back. That race was a mess. We can talk about Interlagos some other time, but that race was such a mess. Giancarlo Fisichella, Kimi Räikkönen thought race ended on a red flag because Mark Webber like bent it. There was debris everywhere. You know, like an explosion in a cheese shop, there was debris everywhere. Anyway.
We're going to end here.
No, please. But Kimi Räikkönen, they ended the race on a red flag. Kimi Räikkönen thought he had won. And then it turned out Fisichella won. They switched trophies. But Fisichella's car, which was, I believe, a Jordan car, caught fire while in Parc Fermé.
Oh my god, it was all kicking off.
We need to talk about that on another episode because there was so much that happened in that race.
Yeah,
it was yeah. insane. Anyway, but yes, I don't know. Back to Fernando Alonso, I will believe it when I see it. I don't know. I don't believe that he's going to retire in 2026. We'll see.
No, same here. I think he's got that dog in him.
He's got that,
and he will keep on going. He will keep on going.
Fun fact: I studied abroad in Spain in the fall of 2005 in a city in northern Spain, in Asturias, called Oviedo, which is where Fernando Alonso's from. At the time, knew nothing about Formula One, had never watched a race in my life, but all of my friends that I was studying with, there were people like parading in the streets. All of a sudden, the entire city of Oviedo turned into a party. It was nighttime. And everybody was wearing Asturias shirts, which is like blue. It was like the Renault colors. It's like light blue with a yellow cross. And everybody was in the streets with like flags and shirts and scarves and like drinking and shouting. Like I'm talking about tens of thousands of people in the street. And we're like, what the hell just happened? And they're like, and people told us, they're like, Fernando Alonso just won the Formula One World Championship. He's the, at the time, I believe, was like the youngest person ever to win the championship. And he was from that city. And so we're like, shit, let's go out and drink. And so I have a picture somewhere that I need to find to show you. And it's me and my friends in the street wearing Asturias gear with flags and stuff. And we're just getting drunk in the streets of Oviedo in celebration of his win.
Now here you are talking about the sport that you had no clue about then. I have a question because I actually have been to Oviedo. I went, I was very briefly working with Fernando Alonso's esports team. We went out there to visit him at his museum because he's now got a museum set up there.
And he has a karting track there.
Karting team. We had some junior drivers in, I think it was like Formula Renault back in that time. Oviedo, you go out drinking, right? Did they pour your drink for you?
If it was Sidra, yes.
Was there anything interesting about how they poured it?
Are you talking about the Sidra where they pour up from really high?
Really high?
Yes.
It's splashing half the drink on the floor. Yeah. And I'm just like, what is the point of this? Us as English people, right, we have barely little head on our drinks. Like, we still have head on our drinks, but barely little head. I go to European and half the drink is head. I'm like, that's a wasted pint. Like, that's not a pint. Give me my money's worth. We want our money's worth over here. So if it's pouring on the floor, what are you doing? Stop that, please.
So we're getting slightly off topic, but the people who are listening right now, Fernando Alonso is from Asturias, which is like a northern, like central northern region of Spain. It's the only part of Spain that was never conquered by the Moors. So people consider Asturiano, which is like the specific dialect of Spanish in Asturias, to be the purest form of the Spanish language because it has no Moorish influence whatsoever. They have a drink in Asturias called Sidra. It is very light, lightly carbonated alcoholic cider. And in order to activate the carbonation, you have to pour it from a very, like, from a large height, from a big height. So you have to take, like, the bottle essentially over your head and pour it to your glass, which you're holding at your hip. And to be able to do it well, you have to, like, train for years. And so the servers who serve you Sidra insist on doing it themselves because they can do it really well and they have good aim. And so you're not supposed to pour your own Sidra. And so you'll come and they'll hold it up really high above their head and have the glass really low. And they, like, the good ones will not spill a drop.
We didn't have good ones then.
And then you drink it, but I think you're supposed to shoot it. I don't think you're supposed to sip it. But
I don't know what we were given then, because it would, I don't think it was that then, because we were, some people were allowed to pour it themselves.
Okay.
And it was more like a slow drinking drink. I think it was just a normal beer. But yeah, we were so confused.
Sidra is very good. Also a thing they do in Asturias to drink, they drink something called calimocho, which is a mix of cola and cheap red wine. And it's very popular with kids because they'll like pour a bunch of red wine into a like a 2 liter Coca-Cola bottle and they'll pass it around and they'll get away with it because everybody thinks they're drinking pop, but it's really, you know, wine mixed with cola.
Yeah.
So that's the other, like, that might be a more Spanish thing, but yeah. I digress. Moving on.
Moving on. We've got this week George Russell. We'll talk about everybody and all their pictures whilst what they've been up to on their holidays. But we've seen George Russell has been hanging out with his family. But there's one picture in particular that popped up on his Instagram where he looks like handsome Squidward. And he's just sort of looking over to the camera. And it's just the pounce coming up and the glance up. And it's just like George Russell has changed massively in the last 2 years. It's incredible.
I love it. I think it's great because I think before then he wasn't very likable. I think he was very buttoned up and came off as a privileged British kid. And I think there's actually a misconception. If you read more about George Russell, he does not come from the privileged background that you would think. He's said in interviews in the past that like his parents like suffered financially when he was a kid. And you look at pictures of him and I think he was like kind of a late bloomer. It took him a while to grow into the handsome British driver that we know now. He was kind of like, for lack of a better term, an ugly duckling. And so I think while for a long time we saw this projection that George Russell had in the media of being like this privileged, uptight, like buttoned up person, I think he's actually maybe like kind of an insecure person who came from more humble beginnings that we think and is maybe was a little more guarded. And that's actually what was happening. He was being guarded as a defense mechanism, not to be too vulnerable or get his feelings hurt. And it ended up coming off as arrogance.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. This is just me like...
I think you're right. And I think that's the way for a lot of junior drivers, especially those who haven't got that opportunity with a big team earlier on. Like George Russell was at Williams. Yes, okay, he was part of Mercedes, but he was at Williams and he had to impress at Williams. And there's always that worry as the new one. You cannot be just so... You can't just go full Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen, you know, when you join Formula One, because you're going to be... If you don't back up with the results, you'll become unlikable, and then people will pick out parts of your personality as well and be like, you should be more like this.
Right.
Whereas you'll see a lot more of the younger drivers when they come in. They're very much PR trained. They're very much say what they should say. They don't have, you don't really know what they do outside of Formula One because they don't showcase it, because, you know, that's for them. They should just be showing that they're just racing and I'm practicing when I'm at home and I'm working out, like I'm strict to it. Whereas once they've established themselves and it's like, look at me off partying, or look at me chilling out on a boat, or this or that. And I think, you know, once you've kind of established yourself, which I feel like George Russell has, he's got a race win, for goodness sake. So I think as soon as you definitely get a race win, you have certainly established yourself in Formula One.
And
I think that's certainly another thing that sort of plays into it too, that he's more established now and doesn't have to worry about fitting into a box to make sure that the team's still basically give him a job at the end.
Also, I feel like, and I say this with love, George Russell is corny as hell. But I mean, I say that from a person who like identifies as being a very corny person. But I think the fact that he's leaned into that and has embraced it has made people like him so much more.
Yeah. I saw with the picture that you're referencing, I saw on TikTok. I didn't see it on Instagram first, saw it on TikTok. And it was an audio track that was played over. It was from Shrek, and it was from Prince Charming from Shrek. So you know, when it's the part of Shrek 2 where Prince Charming is pretending to be Shrek at the end of it.
Oh, that's funny.
And he's like, oh, kitten mittens or something like that, and calling Fiona's things like that. And I'm like, that is so George Russell. I can imagine exactly that's what he's like in his relationship.
Yeah, I think just like the more willing he is to be his authentic self, I think the more people are going to like him if he continues this. So I just hope he leans into the memification of himself, because I think everybody finds it very entertaining, and I think it's made him more endearing.
Yeah.
Going around to some of the other drivers, we saw Formula E driver, former Formula E champion, and Antonio Felix da Costa hanging out with Max Verstappen in what looks like Portugal. I don't know where they are, but they're hanging out on the beach. We saw Lily and Alex in Switzerland hiking in the mountains. We saw him holding a pigeon like a gun.
Okay.
Did you see that?
I haven't seen this. No. Whose Instagram is that one?
I think it's on Lily's, but he's holding a pigeon in one hand like a gun, and he's doing like the Turkish Olympic shooter pose where he has like a hand in one pocket.
Okay.
And let's see what else. We had Logan Sargeant in Saint-Tropez hanging out on yachts, drinking wine while waving the American flag. I don't know why he's waving an American flag in Saint-Tropez, but all right.
He's just got to, you know, he's got to... Gotta just let everyone know that he is from America still.
And he's not sure what Columbus is. We already talked about Hamilton at the Olympics. We had Pierre Gasly, who also was playing golf with Antonio Felix da Costa.
He's hanging out with all of them.
Antonio Felix da Costa knows everybody. What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, I think he used to be in the Red Bull program, so it would probably make a bit of sense that he knows Gasly and then knows Max as well, I guess, from the Red Bull program.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have Charles Leclerc on yachts, where we expect him to be.
With Leo. With Leo. There was some great Leo content, and that's what we live for. Ferrari next season is going to be amazing. It's going to be Leo, Roscoe, nonstop. They're going to take over those Instagram pages.
Also, whatever Pierre Gasly's dog's name is. Are we going to see PR teams for every Formula One driver being like, you have to get a
They're
dog?
They're all going to start getting animals, because Joe's got a cat.
Sure.
Obviously, Albon's got lots of animals.
Yes.
Lots and lots of animals. Other than that, I'm not too sure others have really jumped on it yet.
Yeah. But they're like, listen, we need to get more brand opportunities. You need to get a dog.
All pet sponsors. Formula Dog is coming soon.
Formula Dog. We got George Russell and Carmen hanging out on yachts, doing their typical like 50-year-old retired couple vacation, like living very low key, but I love it. That's what I aspire for. It seems like everybody's having a good time.
That's good. That's what we like to see, that everyone's having a good summer break. I think it's definitely needed for a season like this, where you've got 24 races in the season. To enjoy this time off that it's fully locked down as well, so they are fully allowed to go and do what they want, because there's nothing going on back at the factory because everyone else is back on holiday as well. So very important, and yeah, glad that they get that time off.
Yeah. Moving on, next story. This is like a month or so old, but I wanted to talk on it. Hayden, would you like to
Set it up
if you want?
I can show off what we're going to talk about, because I've actually got one of the wheels right here. Fanatec have they got a parent company, Endor AG. They filed for insolvency and are looking for Corsair to try and buy them out. Now, I love Fanatec gear.
I think Corsair officially bought them, didn't they?
I think that it's not gone through yet. Okay. I believe they're looking to, they were the main company that were going to buy out, but I believe Fanatec have come out after all this news and said that things are still running as normal for them. They hope that they have another parent company soon, but as of at the moment, it's not like they've completely shut down and they're not selling any gear or anything like that. So which is good, because you know, I'm a big fan of Fanatec. I've been using them since 2018, and I would be very upset if they were to completely go out of, I know there's a very competitive market and there's lots of great manufacturers out there in terms of sim racing, but Fanatec are one of the top providers.
Who are the other top providers other than Fanatec?
Simicube are probably one of the biggest as well in terms of what I would say. I think you have your sort of low end of budget wheels, your Logitech. They've now upgraded and got a wheel that's got some really good force feedback in it, but they've always been known as having the, if you want to jump on and see what a wheel is like, you don't want to spend a lot of money, you might be gaming maybe once a week or if that, but you want a steering wheel, Logitech's a good one just to drive with a wheel, but it doesn't have a lot of great force feedback.
You mean like
but if
this
you're not
one?
A big sim racer Exactly like that one, I think. Yeah, is that a Logitech? No, that's a Thrustmaster. I think that one's got better force feedback.
Okay.
Which then I would say Thrustmaster is the one above that. That's what I started with.
Yeah.
I had a 458 Ferrari Italia. Actually, this wheel here behind me.
Oh, wow.
I then bought this as a... It's basically the same as this. It just clips on to the wheel.
Okay.
So it replaced a circular wheel that I had, which was based on a 458 Ferrari. And I replaced it with the F1 Ferrari. I think this is from 2011. This. Good force feedback. Good pedals. And then you can build up to it and get more expensive ones. Then for Fanatec, for me... The next step up from that. I think Moser are a company that's starting to come onto the blocks, but they're making some direct drive wheels and doing some good stuff as well. But for me, I'm very much... once I start using a piece of equipment, I very much stay with that. And that's why I kind of hope that Fanatec can sort this out, because you know I love Fanatec equipment. I stand by it. It's very simple to use, and that works very well with me. And then at SimiCube is the ones where you're like, you're a top-end sim racer. You want to basically go out and buy these all these individual pieces of gear that's going to make you quicker. That is not for me, because I look at that, I get overwhelmed. I'm like, that is too much for me. I'm simple. I just want plug in, play, let's go.
Do you follow the Car Doc on Instagram?
Yes, I do.
He's an actual...
He's got a big rig.
Yeah, he's an actual emergency room doctor in Australia.
Yes.
Who also does sim racing
and flight simulator
as a hobby. But he has an incredible sim racing setup. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even imagine the amount of money that he's put into that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best companies that I visited is Vissaro, and they have some incredible stuff. And, you know, if I had unlimited budget, I would definitely be getting in contact with them. There is not room for what I'm about to say in this bedroom, because I'm basically in my bedroom right now, and it's very, very small. But they have a... rig that is a Formula One chassis, and you can have a half chassis where it's cut off just behind the seat,
mm-hmm.
or you can have the full car,
right?
And
that moves.
They're not allowed to put a livery on it because obviously legal reasons, but it moves as well. Yep, the suspension moves, it's a D-box, so it simulates the motion, which you can get on smaller rigs. But for this one, the car moves up and down in the right places, and it's so cool.
The Car Doc actually tested that, and it was his first like piece of viral content, because he visited Vissaro and did like a full test run of their rig, and it looks absolutely incredible.
It's so cool. Like I say, if I had unlimited budget and a bigger place, that's coming home with me.
Heck,
which I think I asked them, and it was definitely over $100,000.
Wow.
For something like that.
That's so cool. Moving on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The other day on Formula One's social media page, we saw a bunch of team principals in race suits. Who wore it best? We had Zach Brown, Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, James Vowles. So first question, who wore it best? Second question, we put all of them in a karting race. Who would win?
Okay, who wore it best? Toto Wolff. I'm sorry, but that guy is sexy. I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
But he looks so good in a race suit.
He sure does.
How is that man 50 years old? Like, how?
Well,
if I'm looking like that when I'm 50, I'm a very, very lucky man.
Interesting thing with Toto Wolff. You look at pictures before Toto Wolff became a billionaire when he was in his 30s. He looks so much better now in his 50s than he did in his 30s. And that just shows you like how good being a billionaire is for your health.
really is. You eat that right, you eat the right food, you got the right skincare. Unfortunately, I'll be spending mine on a Vissaro sim, but maybe not the right food or skincare. But
so Toto Wolff wore best. Who would win?
Depends in what. I feel like if you're going American series, Zach Brown wins.
Interesting.
He's got that strength.
Because I believe, with the exception of James, are former drivers. James, I think, is strictly engineering background. But I believe Zach Toto and Christian
sim racing.
Yeah. Oh, he does. Okay.
James Vowles loves sim racing. Has a rig, I believe, in his place.
But I believe Zach Toto and Christian were all drivers.
Yes. Yeah. Who do I think would win? I feel like potentially, and this race is happening, like, say it's happening tomorrow. Yeah.
Sure.
Sorry, Zach Brown, but if we're doing a Formula One race, then the weight is going to be a bit of an issue, and you're going to lose time there. So we're going to have to put Zach Brown to the side.
Okay, let's say it's a karting race that where all the carts are weighted, so everybody's on the same level.
Weight can actually help you in karting as well, because you can throw the weight. You've got to throw yourself outside of the corners, and then that's going to give you grip. So weight can actually help you to a certain extent. Okay, karting, we're balancing the weight. Who's going to win? I'm gonna back Zach Brown then. In that case, I'm gonna flip it the other way around. I think he's just gonna be aggressive. He's gonna be shoving people off, and I think in karting, it's what you need to be.
I'm gonna say Christian Horner.
And Christian Horner, are we?
I feel like the other guys would think it was just a fun little exercise, but I think he would take it very seriously and go out there to win.
Yeah. I feel like they're all going out there to win. You underestimate anyone who does racing. They're all going out to win. Anytime anyone does anything racing, there is no such thing as a fun event. Competitiveness is always there.
Speaking of, can we talk about what a blunder last year that Alpine event was, where they had Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly kart against one another? Do you remember that? They featured it in Drive to Survive. And they're it'll be so fun. It'll be like a tribute back to when they were kids. Like, it'll just be a fun little shoot day. And, like, they were miserable at the end of it. They were both so pissed off.
Yeah, because they don't have fun. Like, I jump on online with Joe playing racing, and you think, oh, I just chilling out. Like, I'm like, let's just do these fun things, like take off all the rules. He's like, no, we're not doing that. We're racing here. Like, that's too stupid. That's too chaotic. And then when it comes to racing, it's like, we're having fun. We're having a laugh, but it is serious on track. Like, if somebody shoves him off, he's like, I'm giving it back to them.
How is he as a sim racer?
Good.
Yeah.
On the F1 game, really good. And you kind of expect that as a Formula One driver, but you'll be surprised how many of the other F1 drivers jump on the game and are quick straight away. Like, Zhou will do one race where it's a bit of a stinker, and probably because he's been taken out, and then the next race, he's won it.
Yeah.
It only takes him one race to get back into knowing the physics and the handling of the F1 game, which is massively different to a real life car, because it's not a sim game, it's an arcade game.
It's a simcade game.
Simcade. It's an arcade game. When you compare it to something like iRacing, it's completely different. But like, you look at Lando when he jumps on in his videos, and you look at when a lot of the other drivers jumped on for the first time, their pace was awful, but then they played it a lot during lockdown and got a lot better.
Would you say that iRacing is the most accurate sim available to an average fan?
Oh, God, that's a difficult question, because I know that there are fans of every sim racing game or simulation game.
Mm-hmm.
Simulation game? I feel like I'm going to insult people by saying that. People get insulted very easily in the sim racing world.
Driving sim.
And if you say iRacing, someone's going to be like, oh, well, Automobilista had this years ago, or R-Factor 2 had this years ago. But in my personal opinion, I get the most enjoyment from driving, not playing, it's not a game, from driving on iRacing. And if I've offended anyone, I'm really sorry. But iRacing, I have a lot of fun on. And I think sim racing does make you a better driver, even on the roads. Like, I'm not saying I throw it around on... I definitely don't do that. But I have better awareness when I'm on the road of what other people are doing around me, because I'm so used to doing like open lobbies, for example, on F1,
right,
where people will kamikaze it up the inside, and you've got to turn out last minute of a corner that you just see in your peripheral, and you dodge them, let them crash themselves out, and then get past. The amount of times I've had people not indicate or be like in the wrong lane and just completely cut across me, and I've managed to pull out of it last minute because I can kind of judge what they're doing.
Right.
I feel like, yeah, sim racing makes you a better driver.
Yeah, have you ever been pulled over by a cop and you had to explain, listen, I was just staying on my racing line?
I have not. But if there's no one on the roads, I may sometimes take the racing line for a roundabout.
Moving on. I don't know if you've noticed this recently, Hayden, but I think Williams Racing got a new admin or a new team for their social media channels, because last 6 weeks, 2 months, they have gotten incredibly funny.
That sounds like a really big backhanded compliment to whoever was working on it before. Whoever worked on Williams before, basically James saying you sucked.
No, I'm not saying they sucked. I'm just saying they didn't have they didn't bring like a level of humor that the new admins are bringing.
Do you reckon it's actually just Carlos Sainz? He's just getting in the team early and he's just working on the social media for now.
Maybe. I don't know. But
Or that's Logan Sargeant's job for next season. They're just getting him ready for his role for next season.
Maybe. But like, when you look at the grand landscape of social media on the Formula One grid, I feel like hands down Stake has had the best content this year. Yep. When it comes to when it comes to funny content, when it comes to humorous entertainment, yep. I'd say Aston Martin always brings it. They're really good, but they do a blend of like really sexy and cool content and then also funny, humorous, unhinged content.
Yeah.
And then of course you have Ferrari tends to just be like, we're just going to like do sexy, cool, sleek stuff. They mm-hmm. rarely dip into humor. Mercedes can be funny sometimes, but they also tend to be more buttoned up and packaged the way Ferrari is, even though sometimes they're yeah. humorous. And Williams is more straightforward, I feel. It's more like, here's what's going on. Here's the information. And I feel like yeah. recently they've been very funny and I love it.
Yeah, I think when you're down at the back end of the grid, and I know there's about five teams that are down there switching positions in the lower half of the grid, I feel like you've got to lean into that more humorous sort of style of social media. The ones at the top, you can get away with being serious because you're seen as a serious team competing at the front.
Yeah.
But if you're at the back, you're not unserious because you're at the back. That's not what I'm saying. It's like, oh, you're not serious about this sport, so just have fun with it. No, but like that's a good way to bring in sponsors and advertisement by being engaging and funny on social media and catching people's eye.
Yeah,
because let's be honest, if you're not fighting at the front and you're not on those podium positions fighting for podiums, then they're probably not going to see you as a team that's someone that they're interested in.
If
they're not on the broadcast,
if you can't be P1 on the grid, you need to be P1 in our hearts.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Moving on, speaking of different teams on the Formula One grid, Porsche has announced I always get corrected either way I say it. Some people say it's Porsche, some people say it's Porsche. What do you say?
Just mix it up every single time you say it. Just say something different.
What do you say? You say Porsche.
I would say Porsche. Yeah,
I'm gonna say Porsche. It's just so weird giving both sides.
Yeah,
Porsche has announced that they are no longer pursuing an F1 entry. There were talks originally with Red Bull, I believe, and yep. Red Bull decided to partner with Ford instead. So maybe they're feeling the backlash of that or the whiplash of that, and they just don't want to continue to pursue it. What do you think? Do you think Porsche should have continued to pursue some sort of involvement in Formula One?
I mean, it depends on Audi, really, and how, because there's always that rivalry, Audi versus Porsche.
Yeah.
And if Audi starts to do really well in Formula One, Porsche are going to look at that and be like, we don't want that. We want to be better than you. So that could be seen as something there. But I think for both teams, Audi and Porsche, they were not interested in making a team. And I don't think, you know, we've seen with Andretti coming in, I don't know how difficult it would have been for Porsche or Audi. Maybe they would have had an easier time of coming in because they bring something to F1 rather than F1 bringing something to them, as F1 puts it with Andretti. So they might have decided to go for that decision. But I think it was very clear that both Audi and Porsche wanted to buy a team. And you look at the remaining teams on the grid who are really up for sale. Mercedes, no. Ferrari, no. Red Bull, no. RB, potentially. But as we've said with Red Bull, it didn't work out. They didn't strike a deal, and so that hasn't happened. So they're off the cards. Who else we got? Haas, don't look like they're up for sale. And if they were up for sale, you could probably more likely see an Andretti coming in and taking them over instead.
Right.
But I don't think Haas are for sale. Alpine, I mean, a potential, but I'm not sure. I think they are a bit more stable now, and they've got a lot of different owners and investors in the team. McLaren, safe, bought out by a Bahrain company, I think, or Bahrain backed.
Yes, McLaren is owned by the like, I believe, the sovereign fund of the kingdom of Bahrain.
Yeah. So they're safe.
I will say Williams. I will say Duralton Capital wants to sell Williams. They acquired it with the intention of selling it within a few years for profit. Typically, private equity, I believe Duralton Capital is a private equity firm. Typically, private equity firms buy something with the intention of selling it within a few years. They don't buy something and then sit on that investment for 10, 20 years. So I do think they want to sell it for a profit. I think the caveat to that is I think it'll be very hard to sell Williams Racing if you can't rename them.
I was about to say that. And I think for Porsche, I think that might have been potentially, obviously I don't know, but if I was to think of a logical reason why the Red Bull talks didn't work with Porsche was because maybe they wanted a bit of Red Bull in the name alongside Porsche, and Porsche were like, no, we want Porsche. Whereas the Audi Sauber, I don't know what exactly that name's going to be, but I'm pretty sure that's just going to be fully Audi.
I think it's going to be fully Audi. Sure. I think Sauber will no longer be involved, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much Sauber's involvement or whether they're just fully taking over their facilities and saying, okay, cool, this is ours now.
I think it's the latter. Sure. I think that's it.
Yeah, because, I mean, Peter Sauber's getting on now. Yeah. And maybe, you know, he just wants to sell up, take the money and go retire.
I think if you're a car manufacturer looking to get into Formula One, Alpine, Haas.
Maybe the best option.
Yeah, Alpine, Haas, or I know, I feel like Red Bull is not going to hold on to a second team long term.
Yeah, RB is an option, but it just depends on what they want out of that. Right. Like, do they still say, like, is part of the deal, we still give you junior drivers, you have to run one of our junior drivers, or you run one of our engines, or whatever. I don't know what the deal would have been with them to stop that, but yeah, I think they kind of want to keep some sort of foot in the door, but also want to get some money off of it. Right. So unsure fully how that would play out. But yeah, Alpine could be an option. But you know, that Alpine's been passed around a lot. That's gone for a lot of names.
Yeah.
Lotus, Renault, Alpine, Benetton. And then before that, I think it was like maybe Tolman.
Yeah.
Or maybe Tolman was, we went through this a few weeks ago. But yeah, it was like, it's been around a lot.
Yeah. It was Tolman, Renault, Benetton, Renault, Alpine,
Lotus,
Partridge in a pear tree. Yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that. I hope that they come in at some point, but for now, definitely not.
Porsche has been involved in a lot of major motorsport series. Of course, we have Tag Heuer, Porsche Formula E team in Formula E, who just won the Manufacturers and Drivers Championship. We have Porsche Penske Motorsport in IMSA and WEC. They are in a lot of different racing series. I think it makes a lot of sense for Porsche to be in Formula One. Their brands are aligned in a lot of ways. Tonally, they're very similar. They're like sleek, sexy, luxury. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. But, you know, there are probably a lot of financial reasons that I'm not privy to as to why they don't want to get involved. But one that I am privy to, it's very expensive to run a Formula One team. And it often is, you run it at a loss. So there's that.
Yeah.
Moving on. Jamie Chadwick, former W Series champion and Williams test driver and current Andretti Indy Next driver, is going to officially do an IndyCar test with Andretti in September. Very big exciting.
News. Yeah. Big news. I think, especially for her career, I love Jamie Chadwick, a fantastic person. I've had the pleasure of working with her when I was at both us at Veloce. And really, really easy to get along with. Just a general nice person to be around. And I wish her all the best, and I'm really excited for this test for her. I hope that it all goes well. And you know, IndyCar, I feel like, is a huge step. And I feel like it's IndyCar is very physically demanding. Not necessarily on the neck or on the core like Formula One is, but on more the steering of the car.
Right, because there is so not power steering in IndyCar.
No.
Right.
No power steering. You look at a lot of the drivers there, their forearms are massive. So you know, there's always the talk of racing that there's not really, compared to other sports, there's not too much of a distinction between male and female athletes,
right?
But the biggest that's always been the talking point has always been the steering and how much goes through, because yes, it is on average, it's not always the case between every male and female that you pick out, but on average men grow more muscle than women. And that's how it's been in terms of the steering. That's the problem. That's the biggest problem that's sort of come from it.
Yeah.
And there's easy ways to get around it. And I know that some people be like, oh, but why should we tailor it to? It's not tailoring it to anyone. It's just making it fair across the whole platform. And I believe also Sophia Flourish has been testing Formula 2 cars, and Chloe Chambers, I think it was testing a Formula 3 car potential for the future, and testing all about the steering and trying to make it better and more fair and a level playing field. Because I think once you level the playing field, that's going to be a great opportunity to bring more exclusivity and diversity into the sport, which I think it needs. And I think having it as a blockade that is not necessarily needs to be there in the Formula One aspect is just stupid. Like, if you don't need to have, if F1 doesn't have power steering, why does F2 and F3 have power steering? Now, IndyCar obviously doesn't have power steering, but if Jamie Chadwick can do very well there, then that is to showcase that, you know, she can fight amongst the men.
Right.
In one of the top physically demanding sports. And, you know, I hope we see it.
We also have seen Catherine Legg drive an IndyCar. She drove in the last two Indianapolis 500s. She drove for, I believe, Dale Coy Racing this year and is going to drive for them again this year. I believe in the next IndyCar race that's coming up, which I believe is St. Louis.
I think it's this weekend. Yeah. Isn't it?
And so it can be done. And it's not just that Jamie Chadwick is in Indy Next. Jamie Chadwick is very competitive in Indy Next.
Yeah.
She won a race this season, has finished towards the top in most of the Indy Next races. I believe is like fifth or sixth in the standings or something like that. And has shown that she can be very competitive. So I'm really excited that Jamie Chadwick's getting this test. I am excited to see how she does. And like also, yeah, she's currently fifth in the standings in Indy Next. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, Andretti currently has three cars in IndyCar. There isn't a limit on how many cars entries a team can have. I believe IndyCar doesn't really cap at how many can enter to qualify. There's 27 cars in a race. With Prema joining next year, I think that's going to be 29. I know the IndyCar for the Indy 500, they cap it at 33 cars in a race. But I don't know if there's a hard cap on how many cars can be in IndyCar. So theoretically, Andretti, if let's say they can find the right sponsors to pay for a fourth car and a fourth seat, theoretically could put Jamie Chadwick in an IndyCar next year.
Yeah.
Chip Ganassi, which is one of the other big teams in IndyCar, has five cars.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is entirely true, but the theory is, or the speculation is, that Kiffin Simpson, which is in one of those cars, brought the money to be able to race in that car. For lack of a better term. So it's possible if she tests well and they find the right sponsors who want to back her for the next IndyCar season, that Andretti could have four cars and Jamie Chadwick could be racing in IndyCar next year.
Yeah, I hope so. I've been really getting into IndyCar the last 2 years, and I think this would be another reason to whilst I am a Pato Award fan, I think it would be great to someone that I've known and worked with in the past to then be an IndyCar, I would be fully backing that corner, flying the British flag for Jamie watching those races. And I think it'd be great to see it. I do generally think that she can do well in there. She's, as you say, fifth in the championship in Indy Next. Very competitive field. And there's a lot to get used to. And there's a lot of differences between racing in Europe and racing over in America. Like, there are differences. I think the track limits, for one, is something that is tightened down on a lot in Europe compared to over in America. Like, if you can run wide on a corner, you're allowed to run wide. The grass basically is your track limits, and if you're in the grass, you're going to lose time, so don't go that far.
Right.
And a lot of the tracks do have grass quite close to the circuits anyway. But there are also a lot of more physically demanding circuits too. Barber Motorsport Park is one that I do on iRacing, and I find it very physically demanding, a lot of fun.
I love
Barber. Oval racing is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Barber's a good track.
Yep. I think what I love so much about IndyCar is how versatile it is and how it requires drivers to be able to adjust to so many different types of tracks, which I think is the point you were getting to. You have permanent tracks, you have street circuits, and then you have ovals. Like, what other racing series makes a driver, forces a driver to be able to adapt to so many different styles of racing?
Mario Kart, and that's about it. And that's not real. That's not a real racing series. But that's the only one I can think of.
Love it. Should we end there?
Let's end there. I think that's a nice way to sort of end off on. A lot of stuff has happened over the summer break, and I'm glad that we can still find a lot of things to talk about. But thank you very much, James, again, for joining me on the podcast. Make sure you go check out James's socials, as I said last time. A lot of funny stuff, a lot of great stuff over there. So make sure you go check him out. Feel free to check myself out as well. And make sure you're following on whatever audio platform you're listening to right now. Hit that follow button and go check out the WTF1 official social channels. Until the next time, keep on enjoying your summer break, and we will see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.